particularly with growing recognition of how central the American political religious right was in the attempted coup on our nation's capital, as the U.S. Congress and Senate were together and sheltering from an unprecedented siege, Interfaith Alliance brought together some leading figures on the issues at hand for a live panel discussion on Thursday. Moderated by Alliance President Rabbi Jack Moline, the panel featured investigative journalist Sarah Posner, crisis management expert Fred Garcia, and Sabi Singh, past president at Interfaith Alliance of Oklahoma City. Now, here are some highlights from this important discussion.
Sarah, you've been studying this phenomenon. Could we have seen this coming?
Well, I think we could have seen the attempt coming. I think the way it played out in terms of the law enforcement failure, I think that piece of it shocked everyone. But in terms of the attempt, I think we should have seen it coming. They clearly would not have been as emboldened as they were last Wednesday without Trump's validation. And the validation wasn't just his speech at the Ellipse before the siege, where he told them to go march on the Capitol and fight like hell. This has been 5 years in the making, from the moment he came down the escalator in Trump Tower and called Mexicans rapists and criminals. This is what enthralled the racist right about Donald Trump's candidacy. And he just persisted throughout his campaign and presidency in making these organizations and individuals feel like they were no longer fringe, that they were part of the mainstream.
That sort of brings me to you, Fred, and your work on lone wolf whistle terrorism.
I agree with Sarah that the event itself can't be seen in isolation. And one of the things that I study is the patterns of influence and the patterns of audience reaction to charismatic leaders. And those patterns have explanatory power, where you could look back and make sense of something, but they also have predictive power. And one of the patterns that I've noticed is Trump actually began before the escalator. He began by delegitimizing and demonizing Barack Obama. And that activated the white supremacists who previously were skeptical of Trump. And then when he came down the escalator, that got the attention of the white supremacists. And when he called for a total and complete ban of Muslims, when he called for building the wall, that got the white supremacists on board. But beyond the white supremacists who self-declare, and who, by the way, took credit for his victory, in many ways, Trump has been grooming his followers the way an abuser grooms victims, and getting them to be more and more likely to accede to accepting things that were previously unacceptable. So one of the things that I point to in Words on Fire is 12 forms of language that have historically and preceded acts of mass violence. And the patterns of how those forms of language preceded the mass violence was to condition a society to accept and condone and even commit acts of violence against groups or rivals or critics who have been demonized and dehumanized. And part of that grooming is obliterating the validity of sources of reliable information. So whether it is the news media are fake news or enemies of the people or treasonous, he has conditioned his followers to not accept the reality that others see. And so when he says they stole the election that I won in a landslide, which is demonstrably false, his followers believe it. And that creates the condition where they think they are doing something noble, but in fact, they are being manipulated by the demagogue. and the scholarship on of national security and law enforcement of how a terrorist mindset is shaped is they go through four phases. They see some social condition and say, that's not right. That intensifies into that's not fair. That intensifies into it's their fault. And then it becomes they're evil, they're less than human. And that activates people to want to take matters into their own hand. What is unique about Trump is that he doesn't lead people to those conclusions. He actually uses that language. And that intensifies and accelerates their mobilization to take action. And so when he says the vice president is going to let us down and we'll lose our country, there's this direct line between that and hang Pence, hang Pence, hang Pence.
Oh, wow. What was it that led us to this point now? Sarah, do you have a perspective on that?
Well, you know, Trump came along at the same time that we were seeing a wave of right-wing nationalist autocrats take power or try to get power across the world, you know, in Europe, in Russia, in South America. So that's part of it, obviously. I don't think we can dismiss the international dimension of this. But I think in terms of domestically, I think we got here because Trump energized and validated white supremacists and Nazis who live in America, people who belong to militias, the 3%ers. But he would not be here and we would not be here if he had not had the support of white evangelicals and conservative white Catholics and the other Christians who make up the religious right. Because if he had not had their support, he would not have gotten the nomination. He would not have had the benefit of their get out the vote operations. And I think it's really important for people to understand that the religious right stood by him and stuck with him through every moment when it was obvious that he was wallowing in the support of white supremacists, you know, from more minor moments throughout his campaign to Charlottesville to the Capitol siege. And that they played a role in brainwashing the base into believing that Trump was anointed by God, that Trump is under siege by his political enemies, and to believe in conspiracy theories that put Trump at the center of victimhood and persecution and put them in the center of playing or acting out or carrying out the idea that they are saving America, they are the true patriots, and they have to act in order to do that.
Sabi, what would you suggest that people who are watching now, listening now, need to do in order to make for better circumstances politically and in the country in general?
Well, I think what is needed in this country is what the incoming president has made his, you know, reason to be there, which is healing. After an event like this, there has to be some coming together, minimization of the conditions that caused what this was. And there's only a limited role, I understand, that the Interfaith Alliance can play in that. But I'm thinking we need to be able to focus on that issue and be able to engage people that come to our meetings, that we can interact with. And I don't mean that by having, you know, panel discussions or things like that. We need to actively go out into the community. And the mechanism I think that I found effective in the year that I served as president of the Oklahoma chapter was to focus on community service, which you approach as a diverse religious community. What happens is that through osmosis, through interacting with people that they normally don't meet. I mean, there were many people that met a person from a different faith or a different background, and that's what they vocalized, that this has really helped us understand while we're doing this community service, we are talking with people from different faiths, and we look at a person and see, you know, a person who you might say, who's this guy with a turban walking around? Is he from you know, so-and-so place or whatever. We now know that he's a Sikh. He's a Sikh from India.
Are you comfortable and confident in encountering people who have been in the Trump camp over these past 5 years? Do you feel that there is connection that you can make by reaching out to them?
I think so. We are all humans. And it's this process by which you get to know other people. When I came to this country, I met a number of other Sikhs who had cut off their hair, didn't wear a turban anymore. And the main reason usually was work. You know, they felt that they wouldn't get a job or they would have trouble with holding a job if they looked different. And I have found it an advantage right through my professional career and the business that I had. And I found it earlier than that. I did a month of hitchhiking. And people would stop to pick me up. There'd be 10 people lined up on the entrance to the freeway. And they would stop to pick me up because they found my looks interesting. They were people who wanted to talk to me. And so I think if you approach things at that level, that you are a human being, everybody is a human being. And I guess I have the advantage of my faith, which is a very egalitarian faith. It's not so well known in this country, but that's how my thinking has been shaped. You know, if I am approached by somebody with a gun, I would be as scared as anybody else what might happen or apprehensive about what might happen. But I don't think ultimately it becomes a factor when you get to meet people.
Sarah, you are a journalist in addition to being an author. I'm wondering what you think people listening to us now need to do in order to make things better, and particularly when it comes to news and social media.
So, well, I would say, one, when it comes to news, support your local news outlets, support your local, subscribe to your local newspaper. In a lot of communities, there are new types of newspapers and news outlets that are cropping up that are, you know, fact and evidence-based, and you should try to support them if there's one of those in your community, because one of the problems that we have right now is that journalism has been hollowed out, and social media and conspiracy theories have swooped in to fill the void. In terms of the news, you know, it's very important with your pocketbook to support real journalism. And with regard to social media, you know, social media obviously has played a significant role in spreading conspiracy theories and spreading lies about a lot of different things, but right now about the election. And social media has played a huge role in spreading conspiracy theories like QAnon, which we haven't really talked about that much tonight, but also played a big role in last Wednesday's insurrection at the Capitol. So in terms of social media, I would say that it's important for people to understand how social media has played that role and to demand accountability from their elected officials to regulate social media in a way that would, contrary to what Josh Hawley might say, you know, this does not infringe on anybody's constitutional rights to regulate social media. And to be mindful when interacting with people in social media, you know, mindful of sharing things reflexively, mindful of how you interact with other people on social media. And when I say be mindful of sharing things reflexively, I mean, you know, check it out before you share it. It might be pushing your buttons. That's how social media works. They want you to feel enraged or to feel animated and to reflexively share things. And it goes against our interests in terms of truth-telling and truth-seeking to just do that reflexively. And I guess one more thing that I would say is that if there is someone in your life who seems to have fallen into conspiracy theories, that you should try and, you know, not try to the ends of the earth if they won't listen to you. You know, there's only so much you can do. But I wonder if some people who have fallen into conspiracy theories couldn't benefit from a loving interaction from somebody that they trust in their life.
So the answers from all three of you are the same: engage, engage, and engage. which is important.
Video of the entire panel discussion is available at interfaithalliance.org, and we'll link to it from stateofbelief.com. Well, that's all the time we have for this week's show. Your donations help keep us on the air. Information on how to donate is available at stateofbelief.com. That's stateofbelief.com, and know how grateful we are for your support. Stay up to date by subscribing to the free weekly State of Belief podcast on iTunes or your favorite podcast platform. And take a moment to follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Be a part of the conversation. Social media helps connect like-minded people in conversation and in company. I'd ask you to share State of Belief with just one person this week for whom you think this might be helpful. Our producer is Ray Kirstein. State of Belief Radio is a production of Interfaith Alliance. Become a member today at interfaithalliance.org. And as I've been saying for 15 years now, be sure to join us next week for more stories from the intersection of religion, government, and politics. This is an important week ahead of us. No one knows quite what it may turn out to be. Until we meet again, you all take care of each other. I'm Welton Gaddy. That's State of Belief.
I think it's time we stop, children. What's that sound? Everybody look what's going on.